In general, pride is at the bottom of all great mistakes. Hello, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. You know, many of us are familiar with the old proverb, pride goes before a fall. And it was English author Samuel Johnson who once said that pride is a vice, which pride itself inclines every man to find in others and to overlook in himself. Today, Ken looks at the life of King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, a man whose pride and arrogance made it necessary for God to bring him low. In a moment, Ken brings us part one of Two Babylonian Kings.
Hello, everyone. It's a joy to be with you. The Bible tells us about many kings, especially those of Judah and Israel. In fact, there are two books in the Old Testament which are called 1 and 2 Kings. But what I would like to talk to you about in this message and the next is about two Babylonian kings who are named not only in Bible history, but also known in secular history. And they were kings which wielded great political power in the world empire of their time, which is the Babylonian Empire. And we read of them in the book of Daniel in chapters 4 and 5. And we shall look at the first today in Daniel chapter 4. And this is about King Nebuchadnezzar, who is the most well-known king of the Babylonian Empire. And in chapter 5, it is King Belshazzar, which we will deal with tomorrow. But rather than just trace the significant events that were recorded in these two chapters concerning them, we shall see that each of these two Babylonian kings also personify two major sins, and they are the sins of pride and presumption, misplaced pride and reckless presumption. So they provide an interesting and insightful case study of these twin terrors of pride and presumption. It reminds us of what Paul said in Romans chapter 11, verse 22. Therefore, consider the goodness and the severity of God on those who fell, severity, but toward you, goodness, if you continue in his goodness. When we look at what befell kings Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, we get a better understanding of what the goodness as well as the severity of God in discipline and judgment is. Let's begin from Daniel chapter 4, verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are His signs, and how mighty His wonders! His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and His dominion is from generation to generation. Now, in these first three verses, we find King Nebuchadnezzar writing to all his subjects in his kingdom, declaring and sharing about the signs and wonders that God has worked for him after his dreadful experience. Now, this must be quite something for such a powerful king of a world empire to declare and to testify of God's greatness to all the subjects in his kingdom. The words that he wrote, which we have just read, almost sound like one of the Psalms written by a greater and a more godly king such as David, who knew God intimately. But these are the words of a man who had come to know his own frailty and nothingness because he had been brought so low, and therefore he could see God's greatness. Before we can truly see and appreciate God's greatness, we need to be brought to see our own littleness. Even the spiritual King David confessed in Psalm 22, verse 6, "But I am a worm and no man, a reproach of men and despised by the people." So he knew what it was like to lie in the dust. And likewise, the great apostle Paul spoke in a similar vein in Romans chapter 7, verse 18. "For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells." These were the confessions of men in whom the spine of pride has been taken out. Notice Nebuchadnezzar's repetitive reference to God as the one who worked all the signs and wonders and who is over all his kingdom and dominion. in verse 3, how great are His signs and how mighty His wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and His dominion is from generation to generation. He was now no longer talking about my or I. He attributed all to God. What a change had come upon him. The value of ascribing praise to God lies in this, is to take our eyes and our mind away from ourselves and lift them up to God. From verse 4 on, Nebuchadnezzar began to recount what happened to him. Reading on from verse 4, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts on my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore I issued a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers came in, and I told them the dream, but they did not make known to me its interpretation. Unlike the first dream and vision which Nebuchadnezzar had, and this is recounted in chapter 2 of Daniel, which he could not recall, he could recall his dream this time, and he therefore summoned all his court magicians and astrologers and soothsayers to tell them his dream, so that they could give him an interpretation. And I suppose no one could really or dared pretend to give an interpretation, knowing from the experience of the first dream that there was really someone in the person of Daniel who could actually interpret divine dreams. And so in verse 8, Daniel came before King Nebuchadnezzar, who related the dream to him and addressed Daniel in verse 9 as the chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God is in you and no secret troubles you. Whereupon he asked him to explain to him the visions of his dream that he had seen and what is its interpretation. And here is the description of the dream as given by King Nebuchadnezzar himself from verse 10 onwards. These were the visions of my head while on my bed. I was looking, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong. Its height reached to the heavens, and it could be seen to the ends of all the earth. Its leaves were lovely, its fruit abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it. The birds of the heavens dwelt in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. I saw in the visions of my head while on my bed, and there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, chop down the tree and cut off its branches. Strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beast get out from under it, and the birds from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze, in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the heart of a beast, and let seven times pass over him. This decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men. So it was very clear to Nebuchadnezzar in his memory, and with that he commanded Daniel to declare its interpretation in verse 18. Since all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation, but you are able, for the Spirit of the Holy God is in you. So even though he did not know God personally, yet he recognized that here was a man who not only had wisdom, but that his wisdom came from God. What I would like you to notice is that in verse 17, while Nebuchadnezzar was actually narrating his own dream, that God's intent in the dream was actually given in the dream itself, right at the end. And it's this, it's in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men. So that's really the whole big purpose of the message from God. We can likewise ask ourselves the same question. Do we also know this? Do we know that God rules and overrules in all the affairs of life and the world? But as is often the case with sin, which always blinds us, you find that Nebuchadnezzar could not see that this message was directed to him personally, even though he could narrate it in the dream. And it wasn't until Daniel pointed it out to him personally, and we read that in verse 22. It is you, O king, who have grown and become strong, for your greatness has grown and reaches to the heavens, and your dominion to the end of the earth. And often we need a godly man to say and to show this pointedly. We see the same thing happening when the prophet Nathan had to use a parable in order to get King David to see and to acknowledge his own sin of adultery and murder. And the punchline at the moment of revelation or discovery was this: you are the man. 2 Samuel chapter 12 verse 7. It may have been pretty obvious to everybody else looking on, except the guilty person himself. The lie or the argument of self is always, but this can't be me. And we find the same self-deceiving and self-blinding behavior both in Kings Nebuchadnezzar and David. What did Daniel do? In verse 19, he was astonished for a time, and his thoughts troubled him. Daniel prefaced his interpretation with these discreet words: my Lord, may the dream concern those who hate you, and its interpretation concern your enemies. It's like saying, this is really bad news, and I wish it applied to your enemies rather than you. But he did not mince his words, and he proceeded to tell him directly and personally. Verse 20, the tree that you saw which grew and became strong, whose height reached to the heavens, and which could be seen by all the earth, and so on. And that tree is you, O king. Notice that Daniel pointed out that the tree symbolized the king himself, not his kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar had taken all that pertained to the kingdom to him, and so the discipline and the judgment called for was directed at him. And in verse 24, he gives the interpretation. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. They shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. Did you notice the change from a general intent for all the living to know, as in verse 17, when Nebuchadnezzar first recalled the dream to Daniel, to the personal directed at Nebuchadnezzar himself in verse 25. In verse 17, it was in order that the living may know, that everybody may know, that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. But here in Daniel's interpretation, directed specifically and personally to Nebuchadnezzar in verse 25, the words are, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. So it's to display God's sovereignty and greatness through Nebuchadnezzar, whom God had given the privilege and responsibility to rule over all. And that's how it always works with God's word. His general word gets directed specifically and individually so that we have to take personal responsibility for our response to his word. And responsibility really means just that he has given us the ability to respond rightly to him. Because Daniel understood that the root of the matter was Nebuchadnezzar's sin of pride, he therefore not only gave the interpretation of the dream, but he also counseled him on how he should respond. Verse 26, and inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. This was really a call to repentance, and that is the only right response in dealing with sin. The root of this sin of pride and arrogance can spawn many other wrong kinds of actions and behaviors. It seems there was a further period of grace of some 12 months, during which there was no real change. Verse 28, all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of the 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. The king spoke, saying, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? And while the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. Always beware of not doing something about what God has said immediately. Focus on His word to you, not on the situation or your own arguments. This is the principle of immediate action in obedience. Nebuchadnezzar apparently did not heed Daniel's counsel or God's warning in his dream, and he still succumbed to the temptation to great pride in his achievements. But of all men, Nebuchadnezzar really had great cause to take pride, for indeed he had accomplished much. He is renowned for having built the famed Hanging Gardens of Babylon, sometimes regarded as one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. But God detests the sin of pride which usurps God's glory and attributes all success to self. It's not wrong to accomplish, but to take pride which inflates the ego. It puffs up and glorifies self, and in so doing robs God of His glory. Success or greatness easily blinds a person if it is not handled properly. And success or greatness can become a curse instead of a blessing. And words of warning can fall on deaf ears, as such a person will only listen to whatever boosts the ego. This streak of arrogance and self-glorification was first manifested in the previous chapter 3 of Daniel, when Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, which was meant to be worshipped by all. And I would not be surprised if this golden image probably resembled him and represented him. That ego trip was perhaps suggested in turn by the first dream and vision that he had, where he was represented as the head of gold in the image. Pride always leads to idolatry and the worship of self, making yourself God. And this is something that is abhorrent and detestable to God. It says in Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18, "Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall." Verse 31 says, "The kingdom is departed from you." It wasn't Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom that was brought down, but him. And it needed to be taken away from him to slay the false notion that he was almighty and indispensable. It's to get him to see that his kingdom can go on quite happily without him. The basis of pride and imagination had to be removed so that it gradually withers without support. And God often has to do this to remove something which has become a source of inordinate pride and to bring us down to earth once again from our vain imaginations. A common manifestation of this is the obsession with our possessions. The status symbols can be position or possession. They could be wealth or achievements. And the key is a disposition of dispossession, that of not owning, but releasing and keeping detached from these things. We are called to stewardship, not ownership of the things that God has endowed us with. Nebuchadnezzar was laid low for 7 years. Verse 32, "And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and 7 times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever He chooses." Verse 33, "That very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws." The reference to 7 times is an indication of a time period of 7 years, an expression that is often used in the scriptures. Nebuchadnezzar became mentally deranged. He lost his sense of identity and he behaved as a beast. Our loftiest thoughts of ourselves only lead to a downward spiral. Life can be reduced to the barest existence with no true joy and fulfillment if we persist in our pride and arrogance. Our true worth and identity is to be found only in God. Knowing that I'm nothing and nobody and that God is all is really not damaging to self-worth, but rather truly liberating for a person to be made whole. And Nebuchadnezzar had to learn this the hard way, both physically and psychologically. From being laid low, he began to look up. In verse 34, it says, "And at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored Him who lives forever. For His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and His kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to His will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain His hand or say to Him, "What have you done?" At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted to me. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth and His ways justice, and those who walk in pride He is able to put down. So it required an extended season of being laid aside to come to a full realization and acknowledging of his sin of pride. But when Nebuchadnezzar finally did, all it took was a lifting up of his eyes to heaven and a turning of himself to God, and then his understanding returned. How unnecessarily long and agonizingly slow we sometimes make it by continuing to grovel in the mud and mire of looking at ourselves instead of lifting up our eyes to God. If a proud person who always keeps looking down on other people or things, it is no wonder that he cannot see anything that's above him. So don't keep looking down on the earth to remain down or inwardly at yourself. Start looking up to God in heaven to rise from the pits. As soon as Nebuchadnezzar did that, his blindness was removed and his understanding returned. And he was able to bless and to praise and to honor God in that moment of self-awakening, or more accurately, God-awakening. In restoration, as in revival, God does not delay one moment longer once all the conditions are right and met. But pride is a sneaky sin, which can manifest itself also in an inverted form, when you think lowly of yourself instead of highly. But the root cause is the same. It's centering attention on self. And likewise, the remedy is the same for both, to look upwards to God and not inwards to ourselves. And once God's hand of judgment was lifted, it was as if nothing much had changed externally in His kingdom. The big change was in Him. And that's how it is when God lays His hand on us for a season. Nothing is lost, but we have been inwardly enlarged and immeasurably enriched by humbling ourselves before Him. God can do so much more through us if there is less of me. And as we have read in that last line, those who walk in pride, He is able to put down. So let us not be among those who walk in pride. And may God continue to refresh you by His presence and reach you by His word in your life.
Sometimes God needs to lay a person aside for an extended period of time in order that that person have a full realization of his sin of pride. Thank you for that, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow for part two of Two Babylonian Kings. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have a comment or a question for Ken. Send him a text message, and that number is 9431-3813. Or you can write to him at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore, 915714. And I also invite you to visit our Times of Refreshing Facebook page, and there you'll get the latest updates, and you'll see what others are saying, and you can also take some time to share your own views with us right on our Facebook page. I also invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program online. And don't forget, we have an iPhone app for you to download, and it will allow you to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from your iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.